you ever bully or hurt anybody again, I'll come back and butt-fuck your father with your mom's headless corpse on this goddamn lawn.
What?
This is the Extra Hot Gray Podcast, episode 75, for the week of June 22nd, 2015. I am immaterial H.P. Lovecraft rumor David T. Cole, and I'm here with school bully's worst nightmare, Sarah D. Bunting.
Aspen.
Outlandish sex act proponent, Tara Ariano.
Oh, did you not? Me neither.
And wooden stabbing buddy, Jeff Drake.
My real name's Antigone. Yes, that's what it is.
Oh, God.
Shit.
Okay, a little site business at the top. I Am Not a Crackpot episode is still in need of your submissions. Record some audio, leave 10 seconds of silence at the start and the beginning, and tell us why you are not a crackpot, and then give us your crackpot theory about television. We already have some good entries. We could always use some more. The more that you submit, the longer and better the episode will be. And as a reminder, EHG ads are always on sale. $50 for a personal ad. Wish somebody happy birthday. Make Dave pronounce unpronounceable actor names. $100 for a commercial ad. Stay tuned for an ad this week, which was kind of the best of both worlds. A really great idea. All right, Jeff Drake, welcome.
Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff, for having me. Very excited.
Today, we are talking about season two of True Detective.
Boy, are we.
Butt-fucking headless corpse show
you never knew you wanted to watch.
Yes.
On the lawn.
Sarah has already started her coverage of this season for us, and we wanted to bring Jeff in because we knew he also watched it. And little did we know, season two would be this.
Oh, my God. I didn't realize that the idea behind this season was, it's Weekend at Bernie's, only a mystery.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Guys, this show is terrible.
It's not good. I mean, I was like three quarters of the way through the first episode, and I turned to Dave and said, was it always this bad and we just didn't notice because we like Matthew McConaughey so much? So I put that to the panel. Is that the case?
I don't think so. Although I would say if you were on the fence as to whether the finale of last season was a misstep or an honest or like honestly like the ability of the creator of the show, I think this first episode proves which of those it was. Mm. You know, it's this. I mean, this literally like, you know. My wife did this thing that many of you know about.
We talked about it on the podcast,
where she raised money to go see Entourage. She raised money for cancer research.
And she raised $9 to go see the Entourage movie.
And because she raised over $30,000 for cancer research, she has had to see the movie four times. She has only seen it three times so far. I have seen it twice. I recently saw it the second time.
Oh, my God.
And this was a harder hour to get through.
Whoa!
Than watching any given hour of Entourage for the second time.
Wow.
Because the expectations were so much higher.
Mm. Okay.
You know? I mean, and also it's just like, it's like last season started with a mystery, like started with, oh, here's a murder and it's weird. And then we find out about the characters. This season, it's like, here's three or four completely disparate characters with storylines that
all of
like,
whom are so baroquely fucked up, each one worse than the last. This is exactly what I said in my coverage. So I'll just let you, you know, continue. But like it got us into it way faster and let the character work sort of come from the mystery.
Season one did.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I feel like we just were into, like, we weren't sure exactly what was happening. And there was, the cast was much more adept at these, like, grand pronunciamentos about the nature of things than this cast is. And I mean, this, I don't know who I forget the season director but it's not Cary Fukunaga anymore. And yeah. this guy really loves a moody overhead chopper shot of Southland traffic patterns, particularly yes. the Infinity / Going Nowhere cloverleaf that's just like, and then the town's name is Vinci. Like, are yeah. you fucking kidding me? It's just yeah. way too much. Way too much.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, to jump onto that, like, it's also like, here's this, we've got this land deal going for this high-speed rail, and then transitional shot with incredibly dramatic music. Like, what is dramatic so far? Like, why is this spooky? Like, there's a guy who's missing, but we don't even know anything about him. And then it's like dramatic shots of dildos.
And his name is Casper. Mm. Oh, mm. I get it.
Oh, my God. This is really, really, I mean, this is like, it's if there was a flower called a shit show and the characteristic of the shit show flower was that it continued to blossom over and over until you're like, I can't believe that this is still blossoming, but it's still a shit show.
Like, I believe that's like, called a turd blossom, first of all.
Oh, my God.
I'm not a horticulturist, but...
It was just like, I mean, I think we officially, and this I believe happens in like the first 10 or 15 minutes. My wife and I are watching it, and I think the first, like when we're like, oh, I'm completely off of this now, was mm-hmm. when it's like, never do anything hungry, ugh. Even eat.
Ugh.
It's I like, know, okay, uh-huh. how, explain to me how you don't eat hungry.
And it, explain to me also how in this cast, they give that line to Vince Vaughn. Like, I
hey,
like
he looks okay now. He's not as bloated as he has been.
That's not what I meant.
Oh.
Yeah. I just felt like, you know, McConaughey could do those lines. And Harrelson could do those lines. They're not good lines, but you sort of like, they just would do it and not look down and sometimes sort of semi-wink at the camera.
Mm.
I don't. And there's a moment, I don't know how much further you guys watched, I'm sensing not much further.
Nope.
And as I said in my piece, like I felt like a big part of my Is That All There Is-ness about the premiere, the season 2 premiere, was like season 4 of The Sopranos, Itis, where we had been waiting for it for so long and it was so top-heavy with expectations and like the teasers leaking and all this stuff that it was impossible for it to live up to expectations. I am saddened to report that I was like, oh, well, now that we've introduced everything, maybe it'll calm down a little. Episode 2 does not improve.
Question. Matters. And let me know if I have to send up the spoiler song. Does he come back and buttfuck the father with the headless corpse of his mother right here on this fucking like, goddamn line?
Point of order.
Yeah, you probably should put the spoiler music.
Point of order. If this happens, I need some logistical yep, explanation uh-huh. of how that happened.
Yeah. Okay, here comes the spoiler warning.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I don't know what's going on.
He said to play it.
True detective okay. acts of sexual brutality spoilers aho. Fun ahoy.
Go ahead, Sarah.
Fun?
No.
Oh.
Oh, that's great for the dad. Yes, because Father's Day just passed. Hooray. All right. Yeah, speaking
we
about
can,
that.
We can still address Jeff's geometric
sure, but
concerns
just,
if he would still like to know.
Yeah, yeah.
How it might work.
Yeah.
It involves a crane.
I mean,
about the helicopter is what it involves.
Maybe I'm overthinking it, but I think if it's a headless corpse, it's harder. But I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking
Jesus.
It.
So maybe I'm watching too much Vikings, but I think it would involve like kind of like a battering ram kind of situation where there's
right.
three people
right.
on either side of the. Of the mother,
sure.
and then, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's going yeah. to a dark place, guy. Let me lighten it up with my version of that line for when this airs on basic cable, which is, if you ever bully or hurt anybody again, I'll come back and butternut your father with your mother's peerless smile on this gosh darn lawn.
you melon farmer.
Yeah.
Well done,
Might as well make the t-shirt now.
Oh, yeah.
Can I just say how, I mean, I don't remember really loving the season one episode of True Detective. Like, I don't remember being enraptured by it, but I like the series. That is to say, I don't really remember much about the first episode. But how much did I hate Colin Farrell's character in this? He's just so relentlessly that stereotype cop, the drinking bad dad. My life is shit. The only thing I have is my work. I'm not really even good at that because I fell to the dark side cop. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it.
Yeah. By the time he was calling his beloved son a fat pussy, it was like, I'm out. I don't care when it happens to this guy. Well, I don't care if he solves any crime. He's a fucking dick.
The character note that I really kind of fascinates me, though, about this guy.
The mustache.
No.
The bolo tie.
No.
The haircut.
Nope. It is that when he went to the school drunk and met the dad's, you know, new dad, and there was the tale of the lost pair of shoes, his first thought was that somebody took a shit in them. That was his first immediate go-to.
That's what our forum posters were saying. Like, why is that where his character's brain goes?
Oh, that's what he would do. Yeah. I assume.
Or maybe did do and doesn't remember that he's like, just to confirm. Right. I get really drunk, take my son's shoes, and dump around.
I will say, I am fascinated by that line and that go-to place that he might do. Yeah.
Look, I know that everybody takes a shit somewhere that they regret almost every day. So I just want to clear the air that these shoes were not shit upon.
Maybe he just was a big fan of Broad City Season 1.
We're dealing with pictures of clover fields. We're dealing with people snatching up land in advance of a completely
fictional high-speed California rail that will never happen.
Right. Did anyone else think about that line from Singles where they're explaining to Campbell Scott's character that nobody gives two shits about the train and his dream is completely doomed?
People
really like
their cars. Yes.
Well, it's not about whether people will use it. It's about whether it can get built and everybody can make money on it. I was going to say that all this really just sounds like the plot to Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
What'll kill your brother? I thought just let loose.
Sorry to everyone who got their headphones blown out by that.
It's part that and part Star Wars Episode One.
Yeah.
Because it's, yeah. But
and part Wire Season 2, except for the part where that actually got kind of good. But.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I would like to rewind to this song chosen for the title sequence and say that this is where the show goes wrong immediately. Because the opening song is so terrible.
I don't even remember it.
So on the nose.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, it's just...
Hi, I'm Satan. Detective. Here's some things I did.
And I will find out you cried.
Was it as bad as This Is My Least Favorite Life at the end? Like, shut up.
Oh, and yes,
oh my God.
You're missing your shift at Whole Foods, droopy drawers. God.
Oh, no
worst.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I get it. Either the writer or the director is in love with the singer-songwriter that they saw at the hotel cafe in Los Angeles. But she's terrible.
Would never be in a dive like this.
No.
It's like Adele playing the VFW.
Right.
I mean, right, no offense, Adele. Maybe she's super into veterans and she would totally do that. In fact, I kind of want this to happen now. But no, like that girl is not going to be strumming away and, you know, doing her ovary wailing thing in that low ceiling shithole.
No, it's going to be a really shitty blues band
is
what it's going to be. And they're going to be playing Mustang Sally for like the 15th time.
Yes, it's going to be Blues Hammer from Ghost World.
Absolutely. It's absolutely Blues Hammer. Like they're like the house band there.
Yeah.
Like this woman playing there is like, what world are we talking about? What world are we talking about that any of this is happening?
Speaking of women, can we switch to Rachel McAdams for a second? Because I really want to know. There's the whole thing where the first thing that we learn about her character is she wanted to do some weird sex thing with her boyfriend or whatever.
Sure.
He was not into it. And part of me is always like, what is it that she wanted to do? And then I know the answer is always butt stuff.
It's probably a Carl Malone.
Yeah. Peggy O, I just assumed.
Yeah. No? I don't know, I guess. She doesn't seem like she'd be organized enough to have equipment, though. But maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know. She's got the wooden stabbing guy right there in her apartment.
That's
so
true.
And all kinds of knives. She's not I'm just saying, she's not hurting for equipment.
Fair enough. Yeah. I would also like to tell everyone at HBO that sometimes sex workers do it because they're not exploited. That's something they want to do, and it's not always a situation like she apparently ran into. And the fact that her prejudices about her sister make her less evolved than her dumb-haired culty guru dad really pissed me off also. Because he was right. If this is what her sister's choice is, it's none of your business, and who cares, and maybe work on your own weird sex issues first before you try and pick the mode out of her vagina or whatever.
Also,
thank you so much, David Morse, for making the subtext and the text even texter. Mm-hmm. Everything you do is a reaction to your childhood. Word? What the fuck, writing? Nuts.
Yeah. Well, also, who the fuck cares about that storyline right now? Mm-hmm. I don't even know. I don't know anything about her. I don't know anything about any of these characters.
Yeah.
And I'm obsessed with the fact that I feel like I'm watching an extension of the end of Mad Men now. I'm in that same place, and David Morse, who I used to like, now I feel like is a signifier of bad things. And I mean, there's just so much that's just so bananas about this that takes itself so seriously, but looks like literally Wendy's comment for this. Wendy's my wife, for those of you who don't know, but her comment on this was I feel like we're watching Dead Girl Town.
Yeah, totally.
From Pearl Show. Mm-hmm. And it's I would so much rather be watching it, but it's you could reshoot this shot for shot and not change the tone and make it a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
The scene of Taylor Kitsch riding his motorcycle at night.
With his cheeks flapping.
His face flapping.
His cheeks flapping, and not for a second do I believe he's actually on a motorcycle.
No.
Oh my God. I mean, it's lit, and they keep cutting back to it so much, and it's so, and it's supposed to show his existential angst.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know what they should have done to that scene? Is they should have spliced it in with the part of Pee-wee's Big Adventure where he's driving on the highway and the signs get more and more complex until there's that squiggly one at the end.
Yes, completely.
I think it would have been improved had they just added this noise.
I was also against his character because he let the water run for a half an hour. California is in a drought, sir. That is irresponsible, and you are supposed to be enforcing the law, I thought.
Yes, exactly. Also, is the girl that he's with, is that the missing girl?
Oh, I don't know.
Because if she's not, terrible job of casting, because it looked kind of like the picture of the girl that we saw earlier who's missing.
Yeah.
Rachel McAdams.
It did look like her, but I don't think it was her.
It doesn't make sense that it would be her.
No.
But it's literally why did you cast her twin sister? Or it was so, it's so bad on every possible level.
Yeah.
It's really.
Wow. I was just bored by it, actually.
I have no desire to watch it
I by the end of season one, I was really in for, this matchup of, of McConaughey and Harrelson, and it really worked. I don't see a spark at all between any of the characters. Not that they're doing a lot of scenes together, but according to Sarah, it doesn't really get too much better. So that's too bad. Because
none of them have a spark on their own either. That's part of the problem. None of them is interesting individually, so I don't know how they're going to all Voltron together into someone I give a shit about.
Now we know all this stuff right up front, and it's I don't know. I mean, there's something to be said for good partner chemistry, even if people don't get along. And I think that was the great boon of season one, actually, was that bristly, almost familial love-hate relationship between Rust and Marty. And this it's not – I am a bigger Colin Farrell fan, I think, than most people who are sort of giving up on this. But I also think that the creator, thanks to the popularity of the first season, has now, like, no one's even trying to control the self-serious bombast at this point. And, like, the opener of the second episode, like, just, you know what? Quit now. Have good memories.
Yeah.
Is there anything to salvage out of this, Sarah?
Does it
press any of your true crime buttons or anything?
I mean, I loved your writing about it, so if there's more of that to come, that would be great.
Well, thank you. I'm not sure. I think, you know, the second episode ends on this maybe irretrievable note for one of the characters that's like, you know, I'm going to stick it out because why not? But I don't know. I do think that if it doesn't improve like by very soon, very early in the third episode, that the whole season is just going to be this, like, unrealistic speechifying, obvious symbology, and the photography is not as good and subtle as it was last year. And, you know, even grading on a curve of like high expectations, and we're still getting used to a new cast and stuff like that, it's not good. It's not as good, and it's not good.
Yeah. I wonder if you went back knowing how it ends now, though, if season one of True Detective would even feel like the killing with, like, weirder sex stuff and tits and stuff. Like, I felt like the finale was, like, kind of a letdown that collectively we all agreed we weren't going to say was, or maybe that's just me. And now, like, the over-the-top, I mean, obviously we're part of it, but, like, the pre-roll anger at season two, it seems to me like people almost approaching acknowledging that, like, season one was maybe not that great either.
I like season one, and I thought I
haven't watched it since it aired.
What I remember about the ending is being thankful that it was in fact a crime story and not something crazier, and that, you know, for a show called True Detective, there was a crime and it was detected, and you know,
that's true.
And really, you know, episode one is about the chemistry between those. I mean, the strength of season one is, you know, the chemistry between those two. And I felt they follow that through the end and also, like, through time with that whole, you know, interviews in the present thing they had going on.
And I mean, that's another element.
That dynamic was great. And there was guesswork in that structure that was compelling beyond, you know, the case itself, you know, like what did happen to these two? Why do they seem to be apart now? Why does, you know, McConaughey look so white trashy now, and he was so, you know, put together before, and all this sort of stuff really worked. And I kind of remember the last episode being satisfying. You know, I wasn't as rapturous as maybe some others were about the series as a whole, but I was looking forward to season two because of season one. And I wasn't as, like, totally turned off by it as you guys were. That's to say, I was just bored by it.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit different, but, you know, sad as well.
Well, are you going to keep watching it?
Oh, yeah. I'll give it a few more episodes to see where it goes. I mean, you know, knowing what Sarah knows, that's kind of a bummer, but because I would kind of expect it to pick up once those three people gelled a bit. But maybe there's too many cooks now. Maybe those people just don't have chemistry as actors, you know, or maybe the characters are not meant to. That's too bad, because that was really, you know, where I found pleasure in the first season. Mm. That it?
Yeah,
that's it.
Yes.
All right, everybody, it's time to go around the dial. Everybody brings a little something-something about TV to the table. Let's go to Tara first.
I have two little things and a big thing. One is, this made me think of it, Jeff, when you said you could reshoot this you could, like, show episode one of True Detective as a comedy and it would still feel the same. A Deadly Adoption, the Will Ferrell, Kristen Wiig Lifetime movie, is really worth watching, not because it's, like, super hilarious on its face, but because it is exactly a Lifetime movie that happens to have those two people in it, which is what makes it hilarious. Like, it follows all of the beats of all Lifetime movies. in a way that is so straight faced. That's what makes it really funny. So recommended. Also, two BBC imports on PBS started last night as we record this on Monday. The first one is Poldark, which is about set in the early 19th century. This guy comes back from the War of Independence and his life is all fucked up and he has to figure out how to deal with it. It's fine. It's a little bit boring, but the lead actor, Aidan Turner, is super hot, so I'm going to keep watching. But what I really want to talk about is the show that Serene Leeds, our new contributor, wrote about last Friday, which is a 6-episode show called The Crimson Field, set in World War I, and it's all about volunteer women nurses on the front lines in France. And as I said to Dave last night when he walked in, it was in the middle of it, I would watch 1,000 episodes of this before I watch one more second of True Detective. It's so good. It really like threads the needle between Downton Abbey in terms of its time. Obviously, this all of season 2 was set during World War I, and Call the Midwife in its female centric focus. The actors are all really cool and interesting. Una O'Neill is one of the leads. Kevin Doyle, who is poor Molesley from Downton Abbey, is also in it as a doctor. And it just like it handles a lot of like issues in a very easy, non-didactic way, and I love the chemistry between these women, and it's a part of the World War I story that I've never really seen told before, and it's great. Please watch it. There's only 6 episodes. They did not redo it.
Wait a minute, you didn't find out what happened. We won.
Sort of.
Yeah, they haven't gotten to that yet. But the first episode was a lot about shell shock and how it was poorly understood and people were being sent back to the lines because there weren't enough soldiers and so stuff was fucked up. Anyway, it's good. Crimson Field. Check it out.
Jeffrey Dracolo.
Yes. I'm going to assume that everybody can get on Amazon Prime and watch the shows on there because there are some good things to watch. And last Friday, as we tape this on Monday, Catastrophe, a British show starring Rob Delaney and Sharon Horgan, I believe is her last name,
yep,
Horgan.
From Poland.
Yes. They are the two stars and co-creators and co-writers of it. And there's only 6 episodes. I've watched the first 3, and I find it incredibly charming. I think the fun about it to me is it's essentially about Rob Delaney plays an American who is traveling for business in London, meets Sharon Horgan. They have they get together like over 6 nights, have a bunch of sex. She ends up getting pregnant and he decides he's going to come back and marry her and help raise the child. And what is great about it is it's like a romantic comedy where neither one has self-doubt to mm-hmm. the level of I'm a terrible person or I'm not comfortable. Like Sharon Horgan, like they say things to each other that are so hilariously like on point with things that couples say, but like it rolls off of both of their backs. I mean, they call each other monsters or whatever.
Did you watch the whole season?
No, I've only watched the first 3.
Oh, okay.
And it's filled with like there's just like just great turns of character with the supporting cast. It's a pretty small so far anyway in the first 3, pretty like small world. It's like 5 or 6 characters total, but and full disclosure, I've known Rob for a very long time, and actually both my wife and I taught him improv ages and ages ago. I am not this does not make me in any part give me any credit for his success, by the way. He has done it all himself. But it is really I just think it's a really like it's a really charming and very funny and original sort of take on like a romantic comedy sitcom, which a couple of years ago I was like, I wish they would stop doing romantic comedy sitcoms because nobody can do it. And of late, including like You're the Worst, which this is kind of similar to, but yeah, not really. I think people have really sort of figured out the DNA of that. And so I would recommend it. I think it's a very good show.
Yeah, I watched all of the first season when it aired in the I flew to England and watched it. And it is really good. It's very smart. The reason I asked if you had watched all six is that there's a big, big fight coming. And it's like shocking how real and raw it gets. Like both of what I like about the show is they both have no vanity about these parts. Like they're willing to both be complete assholes in a very realistic way, but it's also funny and great. Good recommendation.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're great together.
Yeah. They have great chemistry.
You know, so it's, I think some people, like I know my wife tried to introduce some people at her work to it. And some people kind of like watched a little bit and bailed out. And I really feel like the end, near the end of the first episode, where they go over to her friend's house and her friend is so terrible.
Yeah.
And her friend's husband is so hilarious that the show really clicks at the end of that first episode. So if you're going to give it a chance, watch all the way through the first episode. And then if you don't like it, that's fine. You've given it a fair shake. So
that's so, very fair of you.
So says Jeff Drake.
Yep.
Sarah.
Well, it's the summertime, and hopefully you have a little more time in your TV viewing schedule. It sounds like a bunch of people are about to boot True Detective off the DVR, and that gives you time to catch up on some HBO documentaries that you might have missed. I have five that I have not covered on the site, but I do want to recommend. Number one is Bobby Fischer versus the World. Mm. That topic should be obvious. Mm-hmm. Number two is Crash Reel, which was nominated for an Oscar, I think, 2 years ago. And it's about snowboarder Kevin Pierce. And he had a horrible accident during competition. And it's about his journey back after suffering a traumatic brain injury. Project Nim, which was also nominated for an Oscar, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. None of these are exactly pick-me-ups, P.S. they're not as bleak as True Detective still, but Project Nim is the story of this chimp who was the focus of a landmark experiment in the 70s, which, of course, it was the 70s. They wanted to prove that an ape could learn to communicate with language if it was raised as a like human kid. The fourth one is Thin, which is sort of a slice of life at Renfrew, which is an eating disorder clinic. This one is like really tough, but it's good.
Yeah.
And then There's Something Wrong with Aunt Diane, which has haunted me since I watched it. If anyone remembers the suburban mother who drove the full minivan of kids the wrong way on the Taconic Parkway, I think there's like still no consensus as to like why this happened. I think she probably like had a migraine, did a bunch of shots of vodka, and everything went completely pear-shaped for a number of families, but it's a very well-made movie. And there's also an article about the topic
in New York Magazine, I think.
Yes, that you may want to sort of dip a toe in with that. And then if you're like, I don't know if I can deal, then you can skip that. But yeah, not all of these are necessarily produced by HBO, I don't think, but they are available on HBO Go, and I definitely recommend them for a summertime catch-up if your viewing schedule is less busy.
That's good to know about Crash Reel, because I remember people were like rapturous about it at the time, and I thought, I don't really care about snowboarding, but I know you don't either. So if you say it's good, then I'll check it out.
No, I really don't, and it was one of those, like, it takes me and my husband seriously, like, a movie-length amount of time to agree on which movie we're going to watch. So it's like, well, let's just start this one, and then we'll continue sort of flipping around, and if we hate it. And then, like, after 12 minutes...
Yeah.
We were totally sucked in. It's really good. I think that's my top recommendation of this group.
But if when you said there's something wrong with Aunt Diane, I seriously, just the title gave me actual shivers, and I'm not even joking. It's that one is so rough. So if you watch all those five bummers and you need something to pick you up, watch that Ann Richards one I told you about a couple of weeks ago. That's also really good.
But also,
don't watch them in a row also, please. Like, break it up a little Clone High or something, because, it's a lot of suffering.
But keep in mind that that ape grew up to be a silver screen legend Dan Hedaya.
Thank you for your order, and be sure to look for your free gift. Would you like to receive a free gift, too, and save money at the same time? I'll be right back to show you how.
In the movies, good guys wore white, bad guys wore black. But the real West wasn't black and white. Marshal Wyatt Earp started out as a gunslinger, and ruthless outlaws like Jesse James became popular heroes. Now, Time Life book shows the West like it really was. This book, The Gunfighters, reveals the men behind the legends. Butch Cassidy's Wild Bunch, John Wesley Harden, who shot a man for snoring. Billy the Kid, Judge Roy Bean. He once fined a dead man $40 for carrying a concealed weapon. Their stories are all here. So are their guns, plus rare photographs and great Western art. Gunfighters is yours for 10 days free. If you like it, receive volumes every other month. The Great Chiefs, The Gamblers, each has the look and feel of hand-tooled saddle leather. If you care about the West as much as I do, you want everyone. The Old West from Time Life Books. It makes me feel like I was there.
Oh, boy.
Who was that narrator?
I was going to say, name that narrator.
I don't know. Is it
Palance?
Jack?
Yep.
Jack Palance?
Jack Palance.
Of course.
Yeah, he of one arm push-ups and Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Yeah, my first guest was actually Ian Khan, who plays George Washington on Turn Washington Spies because of the breathy and weird readings. But it could be
my grandpa.
Jack, could we do that one more time? Only give it a sense of gravitas, because I'm not missing that in this read. It's like you're not even there.
My grandpa totally had those books.
Everybody's grandpa had those books.
I think he had all of those series. But what's shocking to me listening to that played back is that from your recollection, every time you quote that ad, that I remember there being a gunshot in the middle of, they once shot a man,
well,
just for snoring.
They repurposed that line over like three or four commercials.
Oh,
like the old West Time Life book series.
Yes.
Like it had a TV life of about 10 years.
Yeah.
Jack Palance was at the tail end of it, where they decided they needed to really juice it up with some celebrities.
Sure.
So, but the early Time Life ones were more kind of like Ken Burnsian sort of photo pans and stuff like that. And I think one of those was the one that accented and killed a man just for snoring. was in there, but alas, I could not find that one.
Tragedy.
That was a true trip down. Done lovely memory lane.
Do you enjoy delicious and speedy coffee?
Yes.
Do you like supporting local businesses?
Yes.
Do you want to help homeless men and women get off the streets?
Heck yes.
Downtown Streets Team, the hottest and heartiest Bay Area nonprofit, is launching its first social enterprise business in San Jose this summer. The project, dubbed Kartma, is a street cafe that trains and employs individuals transitioning out of homelessness while serving delicious third-wave coffee from local favorite Chromatic. That means you'll be able to grab your morning cup of joe with an extra shot of feel-good.
Kartma is running a crowdfunding campaign to help raise the rest of the funds for launch. The campaign raised 30% of its funding goal in the first 72 hours. Take a break from the Donald Trump replays and head on over to www.streetsteam.org or streetsteam.org /Streets Team.
Streets Team.
Oh.
Either
works
way.
Works both ways because coffee.
Yeah. And contribute or share the campaign on your favorite social media platforms.
We will have the link in the show notes as well. And most importantly, be on the lookout for Kartma. The cart with heart.
Just want to say on this ad that this was basically a donation to us via a ad, and they thought, well, I got some ad space, let's give it to a good cause. And I thought that was a sort of brilliant idea.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And I suggest that to a couple other people, and I think we're going to have some more of this in the weeks to come. So great idea there.
Awesome.
All right, that music means it's time for the canon. Jeff Drake, what do you got for us?
I have brought, well, you know, if it's a canon submission from me, you know that it's old. Because I
like
am old.
You.
Yes.
But let's just, because this is audio podcast and people can't see your beautiful face, you're not this old. Last time you did it, you did Dick Van Dyke, right?
Yes, I did the Dick Van Dyke
You're not
show.
That old. You're not, you're a few years older than I am, but not by much. And Like, these are shows after both our times. Let's just be, yes. Don't sell yourself short on the age department.
Dave, you're being very generous. Jeff Drake is 72 years young.
I know.
Oh my God, we both said 72.
72 years young.
That's what I said.
Oh, it is.
With that in mind, please.
Proceed.
I am submitting for the canon the Mary Tyler Moore Show, the pilot episode. I think one of the interesting things about, first of all, I think Mary Tyler Moore Show is easily one of the greatest shows ever made. And I think it's very famous for having one of the best final episodes of any sitcom. It's sort of like, and rightfully so. And there are a lot of episodes I could have chosen, but I eventually landed on this because once I started watching it, I was like, this is actually like a really great sort of class on how to write a very effective and economical pilot. First of all, it starts off with the theme song, which tells you the whole story and kind of gives, like, here's the psychological motivation behind Mary Tyler Moore. But what I want to say about the show is this is not a although it has like hard comedy moments, they really set out to make a show that was very funny, but also had sort of like a sweetness at its core that really tried to say something new about a female character that hadn't really centered a show before in a comedy. And that was like a woman in her 30s who's striking out on her own by her decision to be single rather than married and to pursue a career. And it doesn't sound that groundbreaking now, but in 1970, it was a real break from tradition, especially considering it starred Mary Tyler Moore, who just like less than a decade earlier had been America's comedic stand-in for Jackie Kennedy on the Dick Van Dyke Show. So anyway, the pilot launches into it very simply by introducing characters one at a time, which is something so every sitcom should try to do instead of the modern way, which is throw me in a room with 9 characters I've never met and have them all shout as loudly as they can what their characteristics are, and then I decide I love them. instead, what the Mary Tyler Moore Show does, which later the Cheers pilot also does, is introduce characters to us one at a time. And first we begin with I'm not going to go through the order because I have the clips actually in a different order. But like introducing Rhoda Morgenstern, who is she gets introduced on her own essentially, and she is the brassy New York transplant, 1970s code for Jew, and who's beef with who does not like Mary from the get go because she believes that this apartment that Mary is moving into should be hers, and actually Mary's other friend Phyllis has already promised it to Mary and already talked to the landlord so that Mary can have it because Phyllis does not like Rhoda. And so Phyllis, they get into a little bit of an argument. Phyllis ends up leaving. She says she's going to go find the owner and talk to the owner, and so she leaves, leaving Rhoda and Mary together in the apartment, and Rhoda and Mary have this exchange.
You out. You think that I'm some kind of a pushover, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, then you're in for a little surprise, because if you push me, then I just might have to push back hard.
Come on, you can't carry that off.
I know.
So, anyway, this is where we begin with these two characters who do not like each other. I mean, Mary tries to like Rhoda, but Rhoda is pushing back. She doesn't really like her. But ultimately, they end up being friends, not because they put aside their differences, but because they embrace them. And they're just like, well, you know, they end up liking each other just for who they are. The other friend that I mentioned is Phyllis. She actually gets introduced first. She shows Mary the apartment, and she couldn't be more different from Rhoda or Mary. And it's crazy. What I thought about this when I was rewatching this is the first 5 minutes of the pilot, there's not a male character in it until like 5.5 minutes into the show. And you're introduced to 3 female characters, And not a single one of them is the ditzy one or the dumb one. They're three completely independent, completely distinctive characters, all of them female. And I can't think of another sitcom where that's the case, where there's three female leads and none of them are like, oh, well, she's kind of the dumb one or the one who makes bad choices or whatever. And so it just – I found that very interesting. But anyway, so Phyllis is very self-absorbed and controlling and amazingly played by Cloris Leachman. And Phyllis can't wait to break some news to Mary later after Mary has moved in. She can't wait to break some news that Mary's ex is coming into town, probably to finally propose marriage, which of course Phyllis thinks is the ultimate. Although you get a glimpse that there's a dark side to Phyllis's marriage also in a later scene. But Phyllis is very excited to tell her about this in this scene.
Well, I got a long distance call today. And I was on the phone for 45 minutes. And guess what? Your boyfriend's coming to see you. That was Mother's news, Beth.
Bill's coming?
I realized you wanted to tell her too, but that was Mother's news.
The other voice you hear in there is Phyllis's daughter, Bess, who is easily the second worst child actor in all of history. the first worst was Richie from the Dick Van Dyke Show. So Mary Tyler Moore got to work with both of them. But what you don't get by listening to it is the withering look that Phyllis gives her own daughter. It is like the most – like the iciest stare. It's – And it's funny to watch a show like this where later these characters are so well known by the audience that that stare gets a much bigger response and lines get a much bigger response because everybody is now like comfortable with these characters. But it's a very funny it's like I sort of feel like that withering stare is in some way gave birth to Arrested Development's Lucille Bluth. But anyway, so Mary goes to WJM for a job interview, and there she meets Murray Slaughter and Ted Baxter. And in this pilot, they're kind of treated the most lightly. They're not really explored that much, but the seeds are planted with these. There's sort of a long scene that I sort of condensed into these two clips with Murray and Ted Baxter, the anchorman.
Hi. You haven't met me. I'm Ted Baxter,
the anchorman.
I know. And I'm Mary Richards. I'm the new...
Wonderful. I've been telling Lou we needed a new one. Murray, give me that list of words that Baxter mispronounced on last night's show.
Check the top one, Lou.
The top one. Chicago.
It's very like the Ted Baxter thing is like it's very like we've seen this character done a million times and but I mean there's almost nobody better at doing it than Ted Knight. He's so fantastic in this show, and you only get a very small taste of him, and even smaller taste of what Murray is to the show. But that's because there's more time is spent on what ends up being the heart of this show, which is the chemistry between Ed Asner and Mary Tyler Moore, and it is crazy how like chemistry is the hardest thing in the world. I mean, you know, we were talking about True Detective earlier, like the chemistry, it's hard to tell if there's any at all, but like you can so tell very quickly in the scene where Lou interviews Mary that they have caught lightning in a bottle with these two characters. And he takes Mary into his office to interview her for a position that's already filled, but he might consider her for another job, even though he admits that he would prefer to hire a man for it. And then he says this.
Look, miss, I was just about to have a drink, and I wouldn't mind some company. Want one?
Oh, no, thank you.
I said I wouldn't mind some company.
Well, all right, I'll have a Brandy Alexander.
Even though, on his face, Brandy Alexander is funny just because of the name, it's even funnier when you know how to make one. So here's how you make one. 1 ounce of brandy, 1 ounce of cream de coco, 1 ounce of heavy cream, shaken with ice, poured into a martini glass with nutmeg grated on top. And that Mary would ask this of Lou Grant is just like, oh, okay, well, this is the drink I like. is hilarious to me. And then there's this very old-fashioned but well-played bit of comedy business where Lou's interviewing Mary, where she answers his question only one question behind, so that when Lou asks her how many reasons there could be for not getting married, Mary answers 65, which is how many words per minute she can type. And which leads to then what is probably the most famous line of the whole episode.
Look, miss, would you try answering the questions as I ask them?
Yes, Mr. Grant, I will, but it does seem that you've been asking a lot of very personal questions that don't have a thing to do with my qualifications for this job.
You know what? You got spunk.
Well, yes.
I hate spunk.
So, like, another thing you miss in that is when he tells her that she has spunk, like, Mary preens so much, like, this is the biggest compliment, and it's really terrific. Then later, Lou hires her, of course, and later he shows up at her apartment drunk because, as he tells her earlier, she lives in a great neighborhood where there's a lot of his favorite saloons, and it seems like he's there for lecherous reasons, but then it quickly – you realize he admits he's there because his wife is out of town for a month and he wants to write her a letter now in Mary's apartment. And as he sits down at her typewriter, and as he starts to write it, Mary's ex-fiance shows up. And there's a great bit of business where it's a parallel scene of Lou trying to write this letter drunkenly and cherry-picking words and phrases from the conversation that Mary is having with her Ken doll of an ex-fiance. And it really, like, otherwise, like, that scene between her and her fiance could have been super maudlin, but they managed to get, like, a lot of comedy out of it. And it also shows, like, this very sweet side of Lou Grant, and then, you know, really drives home the fact that the two of them have this unbelievable chemistry, which they then mine for the rest of the series. There's a bunch of other great stuff about the episode. The show was always very good with its bit players. There's a locksmith that Rhoda uses to help break into Mary's apartment, who then finds out that it's not her apartment. So he asks for a driver's license, and she says, I'm not going to give you my driver's license. And he says, well, then I'm going to memorize your face. And he just stares at her face really closely. And also, like, a really great, like, character moment where Mary thinks that her fiance, ex-fiance, has shown up, and she looks at herself in the mirror and kind of unbuttons a button on her shirt and then buttons it back up and calls herself a coward. There's a deftness with the writing and with the direction of the show that is just really, really super. You know, ultimately, is this the funniest episode of the Mary Tyler Moore Show? No. That's probably Chuckles Bites the Dust, which is one of the most famous episodes. Or there's a half a dozen other choices that are probably, like, funnier. But it's a pilot that accurately sets the table for an entire run of a sitcom and does it probably better than any sitcom pilot that I can think of. And that's the reason why I believe it belongs in the canon.
Okay. I'll start. I've never seen this whole episode before. I've obviously seen the interview scene because it's like the kind of thing that gets taught in writing classes, and rightly so. But yeah, this was a real pleasure to watch. It feels revolutionary. Even, you know, the stuff that you're talking about, that she's ended the relationship on her choice. You can still tell what a big deal this is because she's embarrassed to talk about it at first. Like, she's upset that Phyllis has told her whole story to her kid, even though who cares? It's her kid. But but also, when you so just a few notes that I jotted down from your canon case. You're right that Ted Baxter is a character that we've seen before, but there's a reason that it's described now as a Ted Baxter type, and that's because he established the archetype, and that's clear from the very first thing that we hear him say, what you clipped. And Lou Grant is responsible for some of the biggest surprises in the episode, not just that great interview scene, but, like, when he shows up at the door, that's definitely not what you're expecting to happen. And, yeah, it's great. He's hilarious. And then the further surprise that the reason he's been drinking so much is that he already misses his wife is also, like, an unexpected twist of this character that you wouldn't see coming necessarily. And when they're doing the letter writing, it's clear that what seems easy is like Swiss watch timing between these, especially the two of them, but also that dude, whoever, the himbo. But one weird thing about watching this on Hulu is that I wondered if there was a chunk of it where the laugh track gets dropped out, because there's a point where Rhoda, after she breaks in, looks at Mary, who's just woken up, and says, "Where'd you get that nightgown, Trisha Nixon?" And it's like dead silence.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Weird. They pause for so long. I have to think there must have been a laugh there, because that's a good line.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was just a weird side note about the Hulu app version that we watched. But yeah, excellent case, excellent choice. Sarah.
I agree. Excellent case, excellent choice. This, I think, is the best pilot I ever saw. And, you know, we watch a lot of TV. We watch a lot of pilots. We're used to grading on a curve for pilotiness. There was none of that. It was seamless. It was like, maybe that's because this has just like been in the culture for decades now. So it's not like, you know, I'm not a Mennonite. I know who Rhoda is, but it still is like, that's the kind of thing that would make me very impatient. And in fact, is a lot of what I don't like about sitcoms generally, just the telegraphing. And it doesn't really do that. We were talking before about how this is a, you know, audio medium, and it really is a pity because, I mean, the apartment is fabulous. It's this, like, sunken studio thing with built-ins in the dais part, sort of like the Mad Men New York apartment that he lives in with Megan. All of their outfits are fantastic. Mary Tyler Moore is so beautiful. You forget how, like, pretty everybody was, and also that they looked distinctive, like, there is a sameness to actresses now, I feel like, on American TV anyway, that hadn't sanded all the edges off yet. And Cloris Leachman in particular is like, she looks like a real person, but she's so pretty and she has these fantastic plaid pants on. I wanted every outfit in this.
I have a note here that's like SDB MR interview outfit.
And all the other outfits.
Yep.
Love. But, and Ed Asner is one of the great drunk. It's one of the great drunk performances. Like, that is really hard, especially in a sitcom, because they don't, like, if you're drunk in a sitcom, it's for a reason. He plays it sort of big, but exactly big enough. It was a delight to watch. Murray is just a complete snarky bitch and is my people. And it was nice to see Gavin McLeod after that. Like, pull from very far up my butt in Game Time last week. I was like, oh, it's you. Welcome.
Hey, buddy.
And then I just, like, before I even realized what was happening, Hulu just flipped me to the next episode, and I just kept watching, and it was a joy. So thank you for submitting this. It was really a delight to watch. Dave.
Terrible choice. Not to do.
Enemy of joy, Dave.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought up, like, there are funnier episodes of this show, but this is sort of like, you know, the pilot that you teach in class. You know, you know, it's up there with some of the Cheers episodes that we've talked about and things like that. Just, you know, good craft.
Yeah.
Couple things that you mentioned during your case that, you know, this show has a sweetness to it. And I felt like this show, you can kind of see where it kind of branches off, and like News Radio is made out of the office part of it, and Parks and Rec's made out of, you know, kind of that sweetness, that underlying heart to the whole show. You kind of see its legacy, you know, even in today's offerings. And the other thing you were saying about how economical the pilot was is right on. And I was thinking about the other pilot that I super love, and that is also incredibly economical. It doesn't feel the need to introduce every character. And bear with me, I know the show I always bring up, very few people watch it, but that show's Frisky Dingo.
Yeah.
The pilot is so funny, but it only deals with like the villain of the piece and his trials of trying to get his villainous word out to the public via direct mailing marketing. And it's
USC
just
film school.
It's
ever
just,
heard of it?
You know, for where Mary Tyler Moore is sweet, you know, the Frisky Dingo pilot is absurd, but it has a lot of similar traits to it, you know, and it didn't feel the need to, like, here are eventually the whole cast of characters, which ended up being, you know, like 20 characters by the end of Frisky Dingo. Mm-hmm. And Mary Tyler Moore Show is great for that, you know, because the heart of it is this relationship between Mary Richards and Lou Grant. And, you know, did they ever nail it when in the interview scene? And that little bit with the trailing joke, you know, kind of worthy of, you know, it's kind of vaudevillian. And
oh, totally.
Yeah. And it works in this context, and it kind of like informs, you know, the character so well. And it is what, like a half a minute scene. It's brilliant. You're right. Better, more laughs in other episodes, but like, this is so well done. And for a pilot to be that crisp, is no small undertaking for sure. So, well done. It was nice to, I have seen this before, but it's been like ages and ages, and it's kind of fun to revisit it after like doing so many other pilots in the interim. Yeah. And how just like meandering they can be, much like my discussion here. So I will end it. Let's put it to a vote. Tara.
I just want to sidebar to your point about how the DNA of this, the mentor, yeah, mentee relationship has resounded through all of television. John C. McGinley has said in interviews that his characterization of Dr. Cox on Scrubs was like explicitly based on the dynamic between these two. But also, I got a little bit of like Jack and Liz Lemon in it too.
Yep.
That, you know, there probably were people in the company that were like, we should get these two together romantically. Like, no, that should never ever happen. Anyway, yeah, obviously I vote yes.
All right, and Sarah?
I actually like Spunk fine. It's a yes for me.
Mary Tyler Moore Show, Season 1, Episode 1, Love is All Around. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Gray Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Sarah has our winner.
I sure do. It's Lester Holt, which Lester. I like to say Lester Holt and then raise my arms. Lester Holt, who we true crime nerds will miss on Dateline because he really brought not gravitas exactly, but just the right amount of like good line readings and seriousness, but not too much seriousness to it, has been bumped up to replace Brian Williams at NBC in the nightly news anchor slot. I believe he is the first anchor of color in this particular spot.
Hey. And
I'm very happy for him. He's definitely going to rule the big kids table, and good luck to him.
Yeah, he's great. Loser of the week is Married at First Sight, a show known to me and Stephanie Green, who covered it this season, and Sarah, who had to edit some of the posts about it, and literally no one else. It's a reality show on FYI. As the title suggests, it introduces people at the altar and then dares them to marry each other and follows it for 6 weeks, at the end of which they have to decide whether to stay married, air quotes, because I'm not convinced these are real legal marriages. But anyway, long story short, one day before they aired their 6 month checkup reunion special last Monday, Ryan Donino posted something on Instagram that said that Jessica, his wife, had filed a restraining order against him. Apparently,
Jesus,
he made death threats against her and her family. So once again, congratulations to Married at First Sight for opening the question of how much responsibility do casting people have on reality shows to make sure that they don't put people on TV who are crazy and dangerous.
We've got some audio of that death threat.
If you ever bully anybody again, I'll come back and butt fuck your father with your mom's headless corpse on this goddamn lawn.
Jeez.
What?
Wow, that is, it's weird.
It's rough.
How many people have made that same threat?
Well, it's kind of an old chestnut, I think we can agree.
Yeah, it really is. You dusted that one off.
Ew.
Guys, you know what time it is?
No.
Something about butt fucking?
Nope. Thank goodness, it's game time. Your mom's headless corpse. Your dad's butt.
Aspen.
Oh, boy. Is there like a double explicit tag on iTunes for this episode? Oh, boy. Remember that mom who lets her kid watch, listen to the podcast? The yeah. Sweet note she sent us. We should send her an email.
Yeah, maybe
not this episode.
All right. Hear that, mom.
This is the 10th 10th game time of the season.
Such a good season.
Standings are Tara still on the cusp of victory with 4 points, Sarah right behind with 3 points, and value guest right behind Sarah with 2 points.
Wow.
Today's game comes from Jennifer Boggs, who earns herself an extra credit. Redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of her choosing. I think right there's there. An extra word in there. Today we are going to play Call a Rose. This one's pretty straightforward. During each player's turn, I will give you the name of a TV character. You give me the name of the TV shoe that character is on.
Uh-huh. Thanks, Ed Sullivan.
Yeah, really big shoe. worth 1 point, and the name of the actor also worth 1 point. There are different rounds. We have different themes for different rounds, but everything has to do something to do with names. Okay. Bonus points are available in the final round, says Jennifer. And as Jeff Alexander taught us, high score at the end wins.
So not golf rules.
No.
Okay. Got it.
All right. So with that in mind, let's throw it to our person in control, choosing initiative, otherwise known as Picky, to see who's going to go first.
We will start with Tara.
All right, we'll start with Tara. We'll go to our guest, Jeff Drake, and then finally to Sarah. Are we ready to play Call to Rose?
I guess.
Yep. No.
Round one, nicknames. Nicknames.
Okay.
I will give you the nickname. You give me the show and the actor,
okay
who played that character.
Okay.
All right, here we go. Tara.
Yeah.
Radar. Radar is the nickname.
I have to give you the actor?
You give me the show and the actor. Gary, if you need a clue.
Okay, no, I got it. Right. MASH Gary Berghoff.
All right, good.
2 points?
2 points.
Okay.
All right.
Now I understand.
Jeffrey Dratholomew.
Yes.
Your nickname is, and by the way, this I predict this will be a high-scoring game. There's not a lot of super difficult questions in this.
Don't jinx us.
Well, I like to. And I think the game will be won on the small mistakes and the 3 points versus 4 points and the 2 points versus 1 points and all those little things.
This is all boding very ill for me. It's like I've been throwing a no-hitter and you're like, great no-hitter, Jeff.
I'm saying, Dave is the worst. He's worse at jinxes than me.
He is the worst. And you would know it better than anyone.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Shut the fuck up, Cole.
All right. Jeff.
Yes.
All that being said, your character name is the Fonz.
And I'm giving the actor and the TV show.
The TV show and the actor. I guess if you need a clue, we can do that and we'll figure it out. I didn't really think about that one.
I think for this one, I'm all right. I'll go with Happy Days and Henry Winkler.
All right. You also have 2 points. All right, Sarah.
Yep.
Your nickname, Cockroach. Cockroach. The show and the actor. Yep.
So I can't ask for a hint.
Yeah, you can ask for a hint.
Can I give her a hint?
Well, okay, you give her a hint, and then we'll follow that hint format for the rest of the round.
One of the shows was mentioned in your Princeton post today.
Well, I can't do it that way. No, can I? All right, okay. Your hint.
That was my hint.
Should I give the show or the actor as a hint, guys? What do you want? I guess the show, right?
Show.
All right. Cockroach is from The Cosby Show. Any idea who played him?
No, this is a tough one. No one has any idea Nobody who has. Played him.
Yeah. No, that's why that's a terrible clue.
Well, the name wouldn't have been a help either.
No, I guess not. I
Carl
guess
Anthony
one.
Payne II. I'll tell you what. I'll give you guys the choice if you ask for a clue. How about that? Okay. I don't want to be responsible for sadness.
Sorry, Sarah. You got fucked on that one.
All right. 5 minutes into the game. Here's the fourth question. For Tara.
Yeah.
Your character nickname is Snoop.
I don't know who played her. The show is The Wire. I want to say it's Priscilla someone.
It's Felicia Pearson. You kind of combined all that together into one verb.
Yeah.
Yep. But that's good for 1 point.
Okay.
All right. Jeff.
Yes.
Squiggy.
Squiggy is Laverne and Shirley, David L. Lander.
Nice.
2 points.
Wow.
Well done. All right. Sarah, your second question is Tootie. Tootie. Tootie.
Tootie was on... Stop doing that. Tootie was on The Facts of Life and was played by Tootie. Kim Fields.
Nice! Oh, my God. Nice ball.
Yep. Tootie. All right. Tara.
Yeah.
Your character name And Canada's favorite chocolate bar is Mr. Big.
Okay, that's Chris Noth from Sex and the City.
And is also worth 2 points. Jeff.
Yes.
Your character name and my current condition is boner.
It's not accurate.
No.
Is boner. I don't think I'm going to get the actor, but I believe it's Family Ties.
No.
It is Growing Pains.
Oh, sure.
Andrew Koenig. Josh Andrew Koenig is this full name.
Fans of Never Not Funny will have known that.
Yes. All right. Sarah.
Yo.
Praise be to Picky. Your nickname is Big Pussy.
Aw, that is from The Sopranos, and the actor is Vincent Pastore.
And we're going to have to take your word for that because they didn't even have the actor in here.
but that is accurate.
That came up recently in another Game Time or something. Yeah. All right. Number 10.
Yep.
Back to Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Your character nickname is Rerun.
Fuck.
Bow.
Good times?
Stop doing that.
Bow.
Damn it.
What is it? What's Happening? Oh. And that was Fred Berry.
Okay.
Rest in peace. Good times.
Sorry, Kim.
This is for Jeff.
Present.
Jeff Drake, your nickname is The Douche.
You said a mouthful.
I really wish that's the first time I ever heard that sentence said to me. I will take a hint of the show.
All right, the show is Parks and Recreation.
Oh boy,
who played the douche on Parks and Rec?
Is it Ben Schwartz?
It's Nick Kroll.
Oh,
Dead Girl Town's Nick Kroll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Sarah. Your character name is Starbuck.
Oh, come on.
What?
Well, that is from Battlestar Galactica.
But wait, before you answer, I'm just going to let you know. Think about it. If you don't know one, you might know another.
Yep.
I don't actually know how to pronounce this name, and maybe it's wrong, so that's fine. Strickland? K.D. Strickland?
Okay, think about it for a sec, and then think about the past, the late 70s, early 80s. Take another crack at that answer.
Okay. Well, when I'm thinking about the past, I'm thinking about this actor who I think played Face on the
18th,
but I don't remember his name.
No.
I don't
remember.
Oh.
Sorry. Thought you might know him because, he's...
Was I right? This same guy?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's Katie Sackhoff.
Fuck!
Yeah, and Dick...
Dirk. That's why I thought you might get it.
Yeah, Dirk Bennett.
Benedict.
Thank you.
But I did get a point.
You got a point for Battlestar Galactica.
You sure did.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great.
Good old Dirk. All right. Back to Tara. Here's your last question of round one.
Okay.
Your character name is Wheels. Wheels.
Oh, I don't remember the actor's name, but it's Degrassi. Degrassi High or Degrassi Junior High.
Degrassi Junior High. The actor.
Sarah, do you know it?
No. I only know the character's actual first name. I don't remember the actor.
Neil Hope.
Sure.
Yep. Good old Neil Hope.
Sure.
Yep.
His career had none.
Now he's working at Tim Hortons at Young and Bleur.
Yeah.
Probably.
His name is Two Verbs.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Or a verb and a noun.
Yeah.
With that in mind, here is Jeff's last question of round one. Okay. Meathead.
Meathead would be All in the Family, Rob Reiner.
That is good for 2 points. All right. Bring us into our score break for Sarah D. Bunting. Hawkeye.
That's also MASH. And it is not my TV dad, Elliot Gould. It is Alan Alda.
Nice!
That is good for 2 points.
Very close game, Dave. Your prediction was correct. Jeff and I are tied with 6 points each. Sarah just pulled into the lead with 7.
Apology Ellen accepted. All right, round 2. According to Jennifer, awesome names. Awesome names.
Okay.
Awesome character names. Okay, here we go. Tara, you're leading us off.
Yeah.
Brittany S. Pierce is an awesome name.
Okay. That is... Oh, God. What is her name? Okay, she's from Glee. And her name is Heather something? I don't remember her name.
Heather was correct. Last name, Morris.
Of course.
All right, Jeff. Awesome names. Here's yours. Dr. Leo Spichemin.
So the TV show is 30 Rock, and it is Chris Parnell.
That is good for 2 points.
Nice.
Sarah, Shauna Malway Tweep. Shauna Malway Tweep, and that Malway Tweep is a hyphenated last name.
Okay. I need the actor, please.
Allison Becker.
That did not help me at all.
Here's another hint. She went to my nail salon in L.A.
Ooh.
Doesn't help me. Community?
Good guess.
Yeah. Parks and Rec. Parks and Rec. All right, back to Tara.
Yep.
Edna Krabappel.
Marsha Wallace, The Simpsons.
2 points. Jeff. Robert California.
I'm sorry, say again?
Robert California.
Oh, that's The Office. And it is James Spader.
Good for 2. Back to Sarah.
Yep.
Oh, sorry. Bob Loblaw.
Oh, and his Loblaw. This is Arrested Development, and it's, Scott Baio.
Nice.
2 points. Yep. Nicely done. All right, back to Tara.
Yep.
Elliot Salad. That's an awesome name.
I'll take the actor name.
Richard Brandon.
Nope.
Episodes.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
Oh, yeah, right. But I mean, that wouldn't help me, but yes. Yeah.
Jeffrey.
Yes.
Is your full name Jeffrey?
It is.
I knew it! Christmas Snow is an awesome name. From what show and who played Christmas Snow?
Suzanne Summers, Three's Company.
Correct. Full
no
name.
Hesitation.
Wow, really?
Yep.
Yep, Chrissy Snow.
Brandy Max with 4 X's. Brandy Max with 4 X's.
Gosh. Could I have the actor name, please?
Mara Marini. And I'm
also
just going to say
awesome
this
name.
As a hint. A lot of answers for this show in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. So my customary I don't fucking know guess of Benson is probably not correct?
No. Probably want to take another stab at that. Brandy Max, 4 X's. Brandy with an I. Parks and Rec.
Oh.
Parks and Rec. All right, back to Tara.
Yeah.
Floyd DeBarber.
Jason Sudeikis, 30 Rock.
2 points. Jeff.
Yes.
Butters Scotch. Butters Scotch.
I believe it's South Park, and
here's the coin toss.
Yeah,
yeah.
Gonna need an answer.
Yeah, I know. I can't. I'm drawing a blank on both of their names right now, so I'll just take my 1 point.
Matt Stone.
Matt Stone.
I would have gone the other way.
All right, Sarah.
Yes.
Bring us into our score break. Labia. It's an awesome name. From what show? You'll never get it.
She never will.
Although I will say this. The show's been on the quiz already.
Yes.
Can I have the actor name?
Sophie Rundle. That's got to look good on her IMDb.
Yeah. Is it Sophie G. Rundle? thank you, Benson.
Also from episodes. From episodes. All right, that is our second round. It is done. Let's hear them score start.
Still very close. Sarah has 9. I have 11. Jeff has 13.
All right.
Ooh.
Chance for an extra point in our final round. Round 3. Aliases.
Ooh.
I'm going to give you the alias.
Okay.
You can give me the character name, the show, and the actor for three-point grab. All right?
Ooh. Yep.
So we're going first to Tara.
Okay.
Theodore K. Mullins.
Okay, can I ask for any of the three?
Yes, why not?
I'll take the character.
The character is Winston Bishop.
New Girl. And the actor's name is Lamorne Morris.
All right, so you got 2 points off that one.
Okay.
All right, Jeff.
Yes.
Kate Jones. Kate Jones.
And this is, you're giving me the alias.
This is the alias. I want the character, the show, and the actor.
I would take the character as a clue.
Sydney Bristow.
Oh, that's alias. Jennifer Garner.
That is worth 2 points. Sarah.
Yeah.
Your alias, Heisenberg.
Heisenberg is the alias of Walter White Sr., played by Bryan Cranston on Breaking Bad.
That is a three-pointer.
Well done. First three-pointer of the game.
Everybody's got 2 questions left.
From behind the arc.
For Tara.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Jennings.
Oh, what the who knows her real name? Najiana or something? Fuck off. Carrie Russell on The Americans.
All right, 2 points, and it is Nadashda. Nadashda.
I'm sure it's not that. That's a terrible pronunciation.
I went to pronouncenames.com,
no,
and they had it.
No, you didn't.
Oh, didn't I?
Oh, my God, he did.
I call it up, but just take my word for it.
Fine.
All right, that was 2 points, Star.
Yep.
To Jeff. Duke Silver. Duke Silver.
Duke Silver is Ron Swanson, played by Nick Offerman, on the Parks and Recreation.
That is also 3 points. All right, Sarah.
Yep.
Anastasia Beaverhausen.
This has definitely been a game time answer before.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah. And yet, I need a hint, which is the character's real name, please.
Character's name is Karen Walker. Karen Walker.
Oh, nice little married couple action there. Karen Walker was played by Megan Mullally on Will and Grace.
You just got 2 points. Everybody get ready for your last question. Tara.
Yeah.
Can we have the scores quickly?
Yeah, Jeff has already clinched it. Well, not necessarily. Okay, Sarah has 14. I have 15. Jeff has 18. So I need to get 3 points to tie Jeff.
Okay. And Jeff has to blank out.
Has to fuck up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tara.
Yeah.
Lorenzo von Matterhorn.
character name.
Barney Stinson.
Okay. Neil Patrick Harris, How I Met Your Mother.
That is good. 2 points. Jeff.
Yes.
Dr. Van Nostrand.
I'm sorry, say again?
Dr. Van Nostrand.
Dr. Van character Nostrand. Name, please.
Cosmo Kramer.
Oh. Seinfeld. Michael Richards.
And finally, bringing this home for Sarah, Regina Falangi.
Fuck. Character name, please.
Phoebe Buffay.
Oh, Lisa Kudrow, Friends.
That is good. For 2 points, final scores, please start.
Okay, Sarah finished with 16.
Nice.
I finished with 17.
Oh, my.
Valued guest finished with 20.
Nicely done.
Good job, Jeff.
All right, this season's
this season is, man, on fire.
All right. For shits and giggles, our unused tiebreaker.
Okay.
An answer I think somebody was thinking of earlier in the game. Mm. That's a little hint before we get going.
Okay.
First person to shout out the answer gets 3 Dave points.
Okay.
The character name, and this is a nickname,
okay,
is Skippy.
Mark Price, Family Ties.
Wow, you got both of them. So I'm going to give you an extra Dave point for that. Four Dave points for that. Congratulations, Jeff.
Valued guest.
Yay!
Woo! All right, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. Got anything you want to pitch while we're here, Jeff? Bob's Burgers Comics?
No, I don't have anything to pitch.
We all.
You can follow Jeff Drake on Twitter at HateTheDrake.
There you go.
And you please, should. Please, do not go see Entourage.
All right, everybody. We all took our boner pills to discuss the sophomore outing of True Detective before going around the dial with stops at Poldark, The Crimson Field, Catastrophe, HBO's Summer Docs, and The Old West.
And a deadly adoption.
Jeff successfully made his case for the Mary Tyler Moore Show's pilot for inclusion into the Extra Great Canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Jeff Drake was the winner of this week's Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
Why, I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
Bud Stuff,
Sarah D. Bunting,
I miss McConaughey.
And Jeffrey Drake.
I'm going to need to pop a Viagra to maintain interest in this show.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Not Great.
Hi, I'm Kathy at Time Life Books. If you call now, you'll get The Gunfighters for just $4.95 plus shipping and handling. That's $8 off the regular price. Plus, you'll receive this Western belt buckle free when you purchase your first book.
Call 1-800-445-4300. That's 1-800-445-4300.
This offer ends soon, so call now.
What?